God has given all of us a mission to make disciples here and everywhere for the glory of God. We want our church to be a launch pad for sending people out on the mission God has for them. Regardless of who you are, we all have a role to play. We are all involved in God's story. We pray that the story shared through Mission Control will encourage you to see how God is calling you to be used by Him. Hey there, thanks for joining us today in Mission Control. My name is Amanda, and I serve as the Communications Director here at First Baptist Melbourne. I'm thrilled to be the host of this Mission Control podcast. Today, we're sitting down with Brandon Harvath, who recently embarked on his very first mission trip, a journey that would change his life forever. We explore the transformative power of missions and how it impacted Brandon's perspective on faith, purpose, and discipleship. If you've ever wondered about the impact of a mission trip experience, or if you're seeking encouragement to step into a new adventure of faith, you don't want to miss this conversation. Through our conversation with Brandon, I hope you find that it's never too late to step into something new God has for you. As always, if you think of someone who might be encouraged by this podcast episode, be sure to share it with them. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast wherever you might be listening to stay updated on our latest episodes. Okay, let's get right into it. A few podcast episodes ago, I mentioned that I wanted to do like a space-themed icebreaker thing. I didn't have one, but I came
like prepared. Like as an outer space?
Yeah, like anything that like goes with space, outer space. Okay, anything. Right. So this is my question for you.
Oh, no.
I didn't even email this to you, so you don't have any prep.
I have no idea what you're about to say.
If you had the chance to visit a fictional location from a space-themed movie or TV show, such as Starship Enterprise or Tatooine, did I say that right?
I have no idea.
Okay, very good.
It sounded good, though.
Where would you go and why?
Okay, well, I don't know the answer to that, but because I'm going to lose half your audience right now by saying I'm not a big Star Trek or Star Wars fan, like either.
Oh,
I enjoy them, but I'm just not into it.
I'm not super into Star Trek or Star Wars.
Well, yeah, but it's problematic with questions like this. If you ask me to name a single place on either one of those movies that wasn't planet Earth.
Well, are there any other space-themed movies out there?
Okay. This is not... This is kind of... You ready for this one?
I'm ready.
When I think, because I'm newer to Florida, as a kid, the movie I always associated with Florida...
I think I know where you're going with this.
Do you know where I'm going?
I think,
Flight of the Navigator.
No, didn't know where you're going with this.
Oh, come on. Flight of the Navigator. Okay. Who doesn't know this movie? It is a hilarious movie. It's my favorite. But for some reason, I always think of that silly little spaceship. And when he opens... Have you seen it?
No.
You haven't seen it?
I haven't even heard of it.
Oh, my gosh. I feel so
right
old.
Flight of the Navigator.
And in a spaceship, he opened... Of course, it's, you know, pseudo-alien silliness, but
1986.
86,
nice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I won't tell you how old I was then. But he opens up one of the doors in a spaceship, and there's all these little weird alien animals.
Okay.
And that was probably, I think... Had to have been what I associated most with space as a little kid. So, or at least as a young kid.
I accept that as an answer. Yeah. That was a good answer.
It's fictional, but...
There's really no great way to segue into this. But from there, now you're in Florida. So when did you move to Florida?
So we've been here 2 years and a few months.
Okay.
So May of 21 is when we moved down here. Yeah.
And what brought you to Florida? Where did you come from?
Yeah. So we're from Delaware. Oh. Born and raised. Been there many generations on both sides of our family.
So you're like deeply rooted
in
Delaware.
Yeah. Like like Brevard County people, right, that are natives. Same way in Delaware.
Okay.
For us. So we'd been there for many years. I was serving as the president of a hospital system in Delaware. And the Lord opened a door down here at Christian Care Ministry. We felt called to be here, prayed about it for many months, and finally decided to be obedient. And so here we are.
So what do you do at Christian Care?
So I have the privilege of serving as president and CEO at Christian Care Ministry. And I've been there since June 21.
Cool. So your job could be the answer to this question,
it could not
be the answer to the following question. Where does God currently have you on mission in your life?
Yeah, great question. Well, a couple of things. One, we love our church family here at FBC Melbourne. So I've been all over the world, but had the opportunity to participate in my first international missions trip here last year, which—
That was to South Asia, right?
Yes, to South Asia. Amazing. And I think just the Lord working in our lives for not only opportunities like that to say yes, but just, mm-hmm. I think in so many ways, softening my heart to opportunities like that. And, you know, in my office, if we were there today, you'd see this big, it's about this big. Your audience can't see this, right? But maybe like
he has his hands
8
up.
Or 10 inches, yeah. You know, tall by maybe a few inches wide. It's a big yes. It just says yes.
Okay.
And this isn't about being a yes person. This isn't about saying yes to everything. But it's about just holding open in your hand whatever you think you're so smart about in terms of your plans for your life versus just being a heart posture, being willing to go and do what the Lord, you know, puts in your path, Ephesians 2, right? The Lord prepared good works in advance for us to do and that we should walk in them. So that's where the Lord's had me, just wanting to be willing to walk in whatever he puts in front of me. So so I like looking at that yes and just thinking, man, that's what the Lord's doing for me lately.
Yeah. Wait, so did I hear you right? That was your first international mission trip?
Yes.
That was my first international mission trip
to South Asia?
To South Asia.
Yeah.
My husband and I went in, 2018?
Okay.
Yeah.
So just before COVID.
Just before COVID, a few years before COVID.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So how did all that come to be for you?
Well, I think just coming out of COVID, when we moved down here, I believe that was the church's first trip back to South Asia.
I think it was, yeah.
And when it came up, I mean, it was just a resonation with my heart almost instantly when I heard, hey, we're doing a trip to South Asia. Who wants to go? I'm like, well, absolutely. I definitely want to go.
Was there like a draw towards the region in particular or just the draw towards going internationally?
I think the draw just toward... you know, I've traveled internationally all over the place and just a desire to do it for kingdom purposes that brings eternal value and eternal reward, not, you know, for whatever vocational purposes I may have done it in the past.
Yeah. Sure. Had you done very many mission trips domestically prior to that?
Not really. No. So, no. And this is one of the beauties, I think, of our church family here at FBC Mel. And I've had this conversation with a number of folks. The draw for us in choosing a church family here was really two things. One, FBC Mel, Pastor Scott, right on through the staff, but certainly even the heart of, you can feel the heartbeat of this church, that they love, we love the Word of God. And number two, we have a heart for the nations, for the lost, and for lostness, right? And that resonates with just where my heart has been to. You know, leading a hospital system in a global pandemic, I'm thinking, you know, global pandemic in human fleshly terms.
Yeah.
And yet, we so often forget the true global pandemic of lostness and just how... I mean, every day, the souls that reach an eternity in hell who haven't heard the gospel. So that's how it came about, heard about it. I knew immediately I wanted to go.
Was I'm this like, just I'm a in. Stage announcement? As a communicator, I'm just
yeah. Where did it come from?
Where did it come from?
Where did it come from? No, you know what? I actually believe. I believe we were
God,
sitting.
It came from God.
Well, yeah,
that's, God ordained that.
Of course, that was that's the correct answer. But practically, I believe we were in Sunday school class.
Okay.
And it was just part of the announcements.
See, announcements work.
The announcements work.
Wow.
So Pastor Dennis, I don't know if it was his, you know, the life group email that gets sent out and, and
with the announcements at the end of that.
Yeah, but I believe that's where I heard it. And I thought immediately, it could have been our Sunday morning Sunday school group, or it may have been our Wednesday night life group where I heard it. I'm like, I'm in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. How did God use that trip in your life?
Oh, man. Well, I would say two things. One, just the reminder that there are so many lost souls out there that we take for granted. We live in a country where you can hear the gospel
pretty much anywhere.
Pretty much anywhere. When you go into dark corners of the earth, and if you've been there, right, you get this.
Yeah.
And you meet people who not only don't know the gospel,
had they have never heard of the name
Jesus.
Never
heard of the name of Jesus.
It was shocking. Yes.
No light, right? No light whatsoever. And just the raw privilege of being able to speak light into darkness like that. Mm-hmm. Here, it's almost like, all right, there are shadows and you get to speak light into at times, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But there, you are speaking light into pitch black darkness.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Now you're serving on the missions committee. When did that all start?
Over the summer, so I had asked, and I put the big yes back on the table again, had just been asked and, you know, to serve as a part of that. And I relish in that opportunity. It's a wonderful, wonderful opportunity just to serve on that missions committee, be a part of, you know, not only praying for all of the missionaries that are out there, but helping coordinate some of those activities and just getting, I'll say, my hands dirtier, mm-hmm. right?
So shed some light to potentially people who don't know what the inner workings of committees are like. What does one do on a missions committee? I mean, you're
new. I'm
finding
out. Yeah, so I just had participated in one meeting. Come on, so give me a break.
But I hear those meetings are long.
They're awesome. Yeah, the first one, I think they're about 3 hours. Uh-huh. And yes, we go country by country. Thinking about and praying for the missionaries that are there, getting status updates on what their needs are, how we can help, where the next team is going and the logistics and any issues surrounding those things. And then any new business, right? Opportunities that may be coming up or creative ways to get the gospel out there through missions. So, yeah, it was nice. One meeting. I'll let you know.
We'll see after meeting two.
We'll see after meeting two. That's right. Yeah.
So shifting a little bit into your career now.
Okay.
So when you were working in the hospital, is this step into Christian care your first step into kind of more the ministry-minded career?
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is. So vocationally, I grew up in financial services. I spent a decade in banking.
Okay.
Bank of America and MBNA. And so like Fortune 100 land. And so that's where I grew up, where I cut my teeth. I went over into health insurance and spent a decade in Blue Cross Blue Shield organizations, and then about 5 years running Cigna's international operations.
Okay.
And so had the opportunity to circle the globe a number of times. I had shops in Shanghai and the Philippines and Malaysia and North America and Europe. And that was wild because in that universe, you get to see healthcare outside of the U.S. And that was my first experience.
Yeah.
Nothing makes you appreciate home more than touring a rural hospital in Shanghai, China.
I'm sure,
I mean, it's just mind-blowing. And you see the masses of broken humanity, people who are, I mean, literally a line out the, whatever it was called, emergency room is what we would call it. A line outside and down the block, and that's a standard sight in places like that. Broken, bleeding, sick people, masses of humanity who are hurting, dying, sick physically. I'm sure spiritually as well. And then you walk around the corner, and they usher you into these beautiful sliding doors, up a beautiful escalator, and armed guards into the Westerners wing. Mm-hmm. Where they have the state-of-the-art everything, and there is no line, and it's wonderful, and it's every amount of technology and the greatest advances in medicine you can imagine. The separation between dignity and humanity, how people are treated on one side versus the other is just, I mean, it's eye-opening. It's mind-blowing. But also in how care is delivered, that was the other thing I learned. You know, in Turkey, I realized a standard antibiotic course would have started with something called olive leaf extract. You don't go to like synthetic antibiotics that are approved by the FDA or the CDC. So just the delivery of medicine outside of the U.S. when you get out of the constraints of our system are totally different. So that was my first, those 10 years in health insurance were my first foray into healthcare. And then I jumped into this world of hospital.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So what was the shift then from hospital administration to, it was administration, right?
Yeah.
Into Christian care.
Yeah. So, call of the Lord, I can only describe it as that. For the better part of 6 months had worked with Christian care ministry.
Because this was a step back into insurance then.
Yeah. Give or take. Yeah. Ish. We're not insurance, right? But it's similar,
yeah.
right? In fact, we like to think of Christian care ministry as one of the world's largest deacon ministries.
Okay.
Which is interesting because our role is, you know, like they did in Acts 6. You know, in Acts 6, you have the story of these widows. Mm-hmm. Okay. You have the Hellenists, you have the Jewish widows, and their needs weren't getting met. There was racism, essentially, denominationalism, if you want to get down to that. And some of their needs were being neglected. And some would argue it was the most dangerous moment in early church history because the word was being neglected. And so what happened? The apostles came together and they said, this isn't good. We got to take care of this problem. Let us appoint. And they said three things, men of good reputation, full of the Spirit, and wisdom to solve this problem. Mm-hmm. And they did. And it's amazing. It's an amazing example of how the church didn't lack resources, right? The church didn't lack a need.
Yeah.
It lacked the connector to wisely find the right need to match to the right resource at the right time.
Yeah.
And that's what we like to think we do at CCM. And by the way, the stakes are high because the price, when that's not done well in the church and needs go unmet or neglected in the body, is that the word is not preached. It's not the focus, right?
Yeah.
And so that's a big deal. Those are high stakes. So that's the space we like to think we serve in. It's multi-denominational. We serve about 400,000 people around the country. We will, on the healthcare side, process more than $1 billion this year in medical bills. So it's a big deal to a lot of families.
Yeah.
Yep.
As we look back, where have you seen obvious areas of direction in your life?
You know, I had this conversation with my daughter the other day. Okay. She's going to kill me for mentioning this.
How many kids do you have?
Oh, my goodness.
We didn't even go there.
We have seven kids. Our oldest is 18 in college, and our youngest is turning 3 in a few weeks.
That's a
span. So
we've
got diapers, toddlers, teenage drivers, and college.
Okay.
So, but, you know, I was having this conversation with her the other day about how to know the Lord's will in your life. And I just confessed to her. I said, you know, I've struggled for a long time in my life to feel like I'm interpreting well the Lord's will. You know, through college, through high school, I asked this question of myself or, you know, of the Lord all the time in prayer. What's your will for my life? Oh, my, you know, this proverbial existential question you wrestle with as a young person. And you know what I've realized, at least at this point, so I'm more than 2 decades past high school. I won't tell you how many.
A few.
Yeah, a couple. Let's not go to a few just yet.
A couple.
A couple. And some change. At this stage, I think I've realized Ephesians 2 is so critical. I don't think when the Lord says, you know, his word's a lamp into our feet and light into our path, I don't think he intends to suggest it's a spotlight into our future, right? But he does promise us, just like in Ephesians 2, where he tells us he has laid out before the foundations of the world good works that we should walk in them, that as believers, we can just have a confident assurance and a life full of grace, not a works-based mentality of like we somehow have to earn our Father's love, but that we can just confidently, with a whole bunch of fun and grace, just walk and be obedient. And not have to worry about things like, well, what's the Lord's will for my life?
Yeah.
Acts 16 has always been really helpful to me. And you think through the whole story between that and the next chapter over in Paul's Macedonian call. And I like to think of this example in my own life because Paul kind of enumerates how he tried to go this direction and the Spirit prohibited him. Then he went this direction, Spirit prohibited him. Went this direction, Spirit prohibited him. Finally, he goes west and he goes over gets to the water, gets in a boat, has a dream the night before about the Macedonian call, goes over, finds this lady and her whole family, and they all get saved after hearing the word. And many believe, I mean, that's how the gospel entered the West and up through Europe and so on and so forth. I just find that so encouraging to know that as long as we're holding our plans like this, a heart posture toward the Lord of, yes, Lord, whatever your will is, that's what I want. I'm gonna work, right? I'm gonna take the next step. And I might be thinking long range, that's where it's headed, but I'm okay if it ends up over there instead.
Yeah.
Lord, as long as it's your will. And so I can honestly say I never, ever dreamed or set out to do the things I'm doing now or the things that I've done. This was not my plan at all.
Yeah.
And so I actually thought in college at some point I was going to be a dentist.
Okay.
That was a bad idea. That was a bad idea. Or maybe an architect. And I had that dream for a while on a fleshly level. But none of those things, right? That's not what the Lord had planned. And I really do believe that's the trick, not to get caught up in the covetousness, the greed, and all of the things that actually, you know, underpin the quote-unquote mm-hmm. American dream mm-hmm. that we teach our kids today for some reason, and actually turn your heart's posture to the Lord and just say, yes, whatever that next step is, I'm a yes. Like, just that's what I want, Lord. I want to please you in the things that I do.
I think an encouraging thing from the story, too, is to know as you're walking, God will redirect and close the doors He doesn't want you to go down.
Yeah.
And so that gives you a lot more confidence to actually just proceed.
Yeah. I'll give you an example and say when I was going to college, okay, so I'm a senior in high school. Okay. I'm on fire for the Lord. I'm thinking the only option should be that I go to some kind of a Bible school. Okay. That's now I didn't grow up in a, I did. My parents were saved though when I was like 7 years old.
Okay.
So they were kind of new Christians. Okay. We didn't grow up in a, both sides of my family were largely
Christian. So you grew
pagan.
Up in a Christian home, but maybe not like
but
a
they were
deep...
young Christians.
Yeah.
Right. And otherwise, both sides of my family, for generations, we look back and largely pagan.
Okay.
And I just think, man, how amazing the Lord's intervention in our family tree at that moment in time. But when I was a senior, so I was all full of gusto and exuberance, excitement and zealousness for the Lord and His Word. And I thought the only possible right answer is I've got to go to Bible school, right? That's the natural thing if you're a good Christian.
That's the noble
right? That's what you got to do. I didn't know what that meant. And I didn't have any good counselors in my life to help me with those things. So I just didn't know. And so at that moment, I applied to all kinds of Christian schools. And when it came down to it, I realized I got accepted to most, if not all of them. I couldn't afford a single one. And I got, you know, as I'm giving you air quotes here, stuck at home at the University of Delaware, which, by the way, is a very good school, but it's extremely secular.
Yeah.
And that to me, and even in my first year, I couldn't help but think, failure. Failure. Like this is not, this can't possibly
setback,
be.
Yeah.
Setback. Yes. How could this be the Lord's plan? And you know, it was actually, and as I moved into my junior year, I got involved in the campus ministry, the Baptist student ministry there deeply and had people in my, Christian men in my life at that point who to this day have been the most influential mentors I've ever had. That would never have happened, right? If I wasn't there, obviously. Yeah. But I mean, how amazing that the Lord, He didn't take a mistake and turn it into good. That was His plan, right, for my life. And I just, you know, at the time I called that a mistake. I think even Paul, you know, when you go back to that Acts example, maybe he said he tried to go north. Well, that must have been a mistake.
That was wrong.
A failure. Yeah. I failed. I didn't get to go where clearly, you know, the Lord wanted me to go or something like that. I think he knew better. I think he was wise enough to say, hands wide open, Lord, take me where you want me to go. Clearly, this must not be the right one. I wasn't that mature then you know, in college, and I didn't think of it that way. I look back now, and I just thank the Lord for, you know, those experiences and how He used those moments to completely change my life.
Nice.
Yeah.
Kind of shifting back to mission trips again.
Yeah.
What advice would you have for someone who has never been on one but is considering it?
Just go. And you will not regret it. I promise you that. I've never talked to anyone who's gone and regretted it. I mean, so let's just use data.
Yeah.
You have 100% chance of not regretting it, okay? but it will absolutely change your perspective and hopefully your outlook on what the Lord wants to do with you, right? Whether you are young, whether you are old, whether you're somewhere in between, whether your occupation or skill set is computers or construction or who knows, clinical, it doesn't matter, right? The gospel is a universal need. And so I think if you have the opportunity to do that, which if you go to FBC Mel, you have the opportunity to do that.
Lots
you are without excuse,
yeah.
right? In fact, you know, one of the things I'll just put in a plug and
go
say,
for it.
There were a few trips we actually had to cancel this year because there wasn't interest. There isn't a lack of need, right? And you know, the scripture rings true. The harvest is plentiful, the laborers are few. And I would hate to see that trips don't happen or they're lacking because somebody was nervous or concerned or scared. Just go.
Can you kind of paint a picture of what your trip to South Asia looked like?
Yeah, I can. Long flight.
Yes.
Which wasn't bad. And by the way,
it's
the
overnight
longer,
usually.
It's overnight. You can get up and walk around, right? I mean, the flight's high in the air. You know, it's not like a domestic flight. Yeah, long flight. We got there and the hotel was decent. So, I mean, you can.
Oh, yeah, they were nice. Yeah, at least ours was.
The hotel was nice. So your living accommodations when you get there for the evening or you get up in the morning, think regular average hotel here in the U.S. Little different, you know, some flair, the food, right? When you go down, it's a little different, but not bad. And you can generally get some normal things. South Asia is a little unique. There's no beef, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to eat beef while you're there. But that's okay. It's a small sacrifice to pay for making, you know, internal impact. So we would get up every morning. And we would hit, it's essentially a metro, right, a little train. And we would take that train, a handful of stops down into essentially the slums. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of particular stops we would make. We would meet our team there of interpreters on the ground. And so we had interpreters everywhere we went, super mm-hmm. comforting because I don't know a lick of anything besides English. Yeah. And that's okay. You don't need to know. The teams provided us with interpreters. And they were phenomenal, by the way, phenomenal helpers. And that was it. We would set out. We would begin walking through the slum areas. And there are just people everywhere who are willing and ready to talk.
Not only willing, but they are wanting to, at least in my experience, they wanted to talk to me.
Yeah, this is not like, okay, you can't picture walking downtown Melbourne, okay?
Very different.
Very different, okay? Yeah. If you walked up to somebody downtown Melbourne, like you're going to walk up to somebody in South Asia in the slums, mm-hmm. you would get a different reaction.
Correct.
And that's probably true in most places in the U.S. Yes. But there are people are actually welcoming of conversation. Some of them honestly have nothing else to do. And so they relish in that opportunity just to have a conversation with somebody else. So you're a little standoutish, right? At least I am. I'm a big guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I stand out a bit.
Yeah.
Big white guy from the clearly an American. Okay. Yeah. There's not much hiding my, my stature in a place like that where folks are generally a little smaller in stature than, mm-hmm. you know, my frame. So there's some of that happens and people just want to talk to you like, oh,
yeah.
We'd get a few followings of, you know, neighborhood kids running behind us. And we had a great time. And that was the work every day. We'd go out into the slums. We would do that for a few hours, get some lunch, get to regroup with the team. We had some other things that we would do with some of the other missionaries and Christians there on the ground. We would go to some of their home church services, mm-hmm. Meet with some of the other missionaries and churches that they go to. Yeah, it was incredible.
Did y'all ever have a meal with any of the families in the slums?
Oh, we had lots of meals.
Get invited back for a meal.
Yes.
Because we only did that once.
Yeah, I'm just getting thrown by the word meal because
there's lots of like
what
food
most of us
and
would
snacks
consider,
and beverages offered.
You know, I was warned before I went, okay, Brandon, whatever you do, when you get into the huts or the homes and where you're headed, just don't eat the food. Just be polite as you can, but try not to eat it because chances are your stomach is not going to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I just prayed, 1 Timothy 4, Lord, just perfect this food as it goes into my mouth and don't make me sick. They invite you. Food is common for them to offer. They bring anything. And you almost feel bad. You think they probably just spent a week or a month's worth of wages on the meal that they're bringing to you.
Yeah.
They make you chai tea.
Chai tea is nice.
It is nice. Lots of food, lots of fun. I got to try, I think it was, goat brain while I was there.
Yeah, you sent me a video of it.
Oh, did I?
You did.
Oh, I forgot that. Okay.
I watched it. I was like, I just want to call out,
none of my teammates would try it, just for the record.
I won't call them out by name. I have the video of some of your teammates.
I won't call them out by
name. Reacting to it.
Except for Pastor Scott. I will say,
of course.
He may have been there.
Maybe.
Maybe.
So, finally, what advice or encouragement would you have for someone feeling the call to make disciples here and everywhere for the glory of God?
Yeah, I would just say obedience is so key in this. But you know what? Don't do it out of this feeling of duty. Find that deep joy, that deep, deep joy and desire for God. And, you know, if you're looking for that, if you're struggling, go read Psalm 119 and then read it again and then read it again. And like David, delight in his word, delight in the Lord. And when you find that delight and joy in God first, you are not going to be able to help yourself, but overflow that into love for others. And I really do think that is the best advice I could give. One, get your heart into a position and posture. Whatever it takes, it's going to mean time in the Word and pursuing God and loving Him. And when you do that, I think you're going to find the same yes that I found, right?
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, I just want to go. Where are we going next, right?
Yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah.
Where are we going next? And that's what's going to drive and propel you to want to go. Don't do it just because I gave you a guilt trip, right, today, or somebody.
Quote, it was the right thing.
It was the right thing to do. You can, and maybe that helps you out of duty. You know, just like the law is a crutch, right, until the Savior came. No different. You know, sometimes duty is helpful to get us to delight. And so maybe go. But I hope that if you do it that way, when you get there, you find delight in the Lord.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mission Control. If you're interested in learning more about Launch 10X and the different ways to get involved in what God is doing here at First Baptist Melbourne, a great place to start would be visiting our website, launchme.church. If you've been around First Baptist Melbourne very long, our next guest on Mission Control will need very little introduction. In our next episode of Mission Control, we have Martha Root joining us. Martha has been serving on staff at First Baptist Melbourne for close to 50 years and is currently in the process of retiring. She started as the pastor's secretary in 1974 and moved to serve on staff with the radio station when the radio station began in 1980. Martha has seen a lot of history made both here on the Space Coast and here at First Baptist Melbourne. I can't wait for you to hear more from Martha as we glean as much as we can from 50 years of ministry in a single podcast episode. It's going to be a good one. Until then, I hope you have a great week on mission with King Jesus.